This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. James wrote his letter so that readers could develop a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith in God. As we're developing this kind of faith, what are the things that drive and control us? What are the things that we hunger for? Today, Pastor Sam Horn will continue a sermon from James chapter 4, titled, Never Stones or Serpents. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
And James is looking at them and he is saying, we have got to talk. Because all that you are saying back to me that sounds so good is actually being betrayed by the evidence that is coming out of your life. So what is the evidence that he's going to point to? That's question number one. Question number two is once he shows them the evidence, you remember what Garrett said when he was talking to our kids and he held up the $5 bill at the end? He said, this $5 bill is not the problem. The problem is where? The problem is not in the $5 bill, the problem is where? It's in your heart. So there is some root cause for all of this that James is going to expose. And then thirdly, here's the big thing we want to ask ourselves, and that is this. How does God feel about this? How does God feel about this? And what does he do about it? And then the fourth question is, what response does God call for them to give? What does God want them to do about this? All right? So, James is going to unpack this intervention along three lines. Here's the first line. He confronts the devastating reality. Now, remember who he's talking to. He's talking to Christians. He's talking to a congregation, and he's wanting it to go right down into the individual life of the people who make up that congregation. And those people are convinced that they have a living faith, and that faith is growing, maturing, and that they're not double-minded. And so James says, I've got to talk to you. I'm going to have to confront a reality that you're not thinking about. And here's a reality, and you can see it. What causes quarrels and fights among you? In other words, James says, I'm going to point to an undeniable reality. You're making these claims. You're lining up with what I'm saying about wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, and you're acknowledging wisdom from above, but here is an undeniable reality. There are quarrels and fights among you. And what this means is that the shalom God has made has been broken by you. Go back to chapter 3, verse 18. If wisdom from above is operating in your life and in your relationships or in a congregation, here is what it produces. A harvest of righteousness is sown in shalom by those who make shalom. And so James says, I'm going to give you undeniable, irrefutable evidence that you have not been using wisdom that promotes and protects and preserves shalom. You've been using the other wisdom, and the reason I can say that is because of this undeniable thing that I'm observing, and that is you are at war with each other. So this convincing question, what causes wars and what causes fights among you, the word quarrels is the word for war. It's the idea of a prolonged military war between two groups or between two nations. And the word fights in this is a word that would sort of carry out the idea of an individual battle inside that big war. So you guys are at war with each other, and there are battles that erupt. And the nature of the battle, based on the word James uses here, is that it is verbal. It is verbal. The idea here with the term James uses is this. It's a heated dispute. It is a loud argument. It is personal defamation. It is disparagement. James is saying, look, There is a verbal war going on in you and among you. And what is happening is you are doing things with your mouth against each other that is shattering the shalom that God made. Have you ever been in a place where you walk in and it is so tense? And the verbal language that is going on between people in that circumstance, you realize, whoa. You ever felt this way? You walk in and you sit down and you're like, hey, how's it going? Whoa. Okay, you know what? I'll come back later. You ever do that? You ever walk in a room and people are having I think I'll come back later. That's the idea that James is wanting you to sense. There is this battle that is going on. And James says, now why is that? He gives a clarifying answer. Is not the reason for this that your passions are at war in you? The reason that you're at war with each other is because there is a war going on inside you. And the war that is going on inside you has to do with your passions. The word passion there is the word we get our English word hedonism from. And it's a strong word. In fact, James uses a synonym of this word back in chapter 1 when he was trying to explain to us why temptations are so attractive to us. Temptations are so attractive to a believer because there's something inside that has an appetite, a strong yearning for that thing that is being offered by the temptation. And James says there is a desire, there is an appetite that is going on in you, and that appetite is driving you to certain conduct. This is what James talked about in chapter 1, but it's what Jesus referred to in Luke 8:14 when he said that the seed would fall on certain ground in people's lives, and then it would be choked by the cares, the riches, and the pleasures of life. That word pleasure in Jesus' statement there is the same word that James uses here. There is something, there's an appetite in you that yearns for something pleasurable. That word can sometimes be used for good things. But in this context, what's going on around here makes real clear that James is not talking about that kind of a good desire. He's talking about an appetite for something that God has either said no to or has not given you yet. And because you want this, you're willing to engage in wicked conduct. You desire and you do not have, so you murder. You covet and you cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You go to war. This desire, this appetite that you want to enjoy, that God has said no to or God hasn't given to you, is so strong in you that you are willing to murder your brother over this. Kind of takes you back to Genesis chapter 4, doesn't it? Where two brothers were offering acceptable sacrifices to God, and one was accepted and the other wasn't. And it made the other so angry that he rose up and he slew his brother. So before we dismiss this as just, oh, it's not physical murder, remember back to Genesis 4, it can lead to that. But here in this text, in chapters 1, 2, and 3, James has been talking about the use of the tongue. Constantly in the book, he says, do not say. In chapter 3, the first part of chapter 3, he has a whole chapter, whole half chapter, on how a believer can have the kind of operating system that would take his tongue and set it on fire from hell and use it in very destructive ways. Well, that tongue has been at work here. And James says, you want evidence that the wrong wisdom is operating? I know what you say. I know that you are all about saying you're about the right wisdom and you're all about your wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, but here's the evidence. Your tongue has been at work. You have been character assassinating each other. You have been wounding each other, and you've been destroying each other. You have been murdering people with your mouth. And the reason that is all happening is because of an appetite that is so strong in you that you're willing to set aside what God has said. And that brings us to the denial from God. James says, you do not have because you do not ask. And you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passion. So here's James' point. You do not get what you want from God because you have stopped asking him. And the reason you have stopped asking him is because he has not granted you what you're asking for. And because you have asked God and he hasn't granted what you want, you've stopped asking and you've decided, I'm going to go get this another way. The way God told me to get it is to come to him and ask him for it. And he's not giving me what I'm asking for. And so I'm going to stop asking and I'm going to go over here and figure out how I'm going to get what I want. This is exactly what happened in Old Testament Israel in Elijah's day. They wanted rain. They were desperate for rain. And God had said in his word how to get rain. Humble yourself. Come before me with a clean heart and pure hands. Ask me for rain, and I will give it. But they weren't willing to do that. They were willing to ask God, but they weren't willing to humble themselves. They weren't willing to cleanse their hands. They weren't willing to unify their hearts like Psalm 24 talks about. And because God didn't send them rain, and they were dying, they said to themselves, well, there actually is a new way to get rain. Our king married a woman, and she brought in a ton of prophets and a ton of priests, and they actually have a new god they're introducing to us called Baal, and this god is the god of rain. And so since God isn't giving us rain when we ask him for it here, maybe we should come over here and we should ask God for this god for rain. This is exactly where James is going here. When God says no to you about an appetite that you want, are you willing to take the no with joy? Or are you going to go and say, how would the world tell me how to get this? There is a way to get this because people have it all the time. That's why I want it. I see somebody else has this. I see that over there. I see a bigger house. I see a better car. I see a better job. I see all of these things, and I want it, and God is not giving it to me. So how do they get it? And then you go figure out how they get it. And then you decide, that's how I'm going to get it. So here's the big question for us this morning. Why doesn't God give his children what they ask for? Especially when you read Matthew chapter 7, when he says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened. So if I'm these people, I'm going, well, God, you told me that if I asked, I would receive. If I knock, you would open. And I've been asking and I've been knocking and you haven't given. So since you aren't keeping your word to me, I'm going to go figure out how to get it. So we got to ask ourselves, given that statement in Matthew 7, what do we do when God says no? Well, let me take you to another text that I think explains this to us. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 9 through 11, Jesus goes on to say, which one of you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts, how much more will your Father in heaven give good things to those who ask him? So here's James' point. You have not because you've stopped asking. And the reason you've stopped asking is because God has chosen not to give you a serpent or a stone. God never gives stones or serpents to his children. So if God has said no to something you want, or if he said not now, he is doing it because he always is a good father who always gives you good things. Are you willing to embrace that? I mean, let's say that you are at home and you've just received a notice from your boss saying, hey, we're transferring you to another state, or we're ending your job. And are you willing to say to God, God, that is a good gift for me, because you have somebody or something, you have some kingdom purpose that you have for me that will exalt your name, extend your kingdom, and help others do your will, that you have for me to be a part of, and this season, it can't happen here. Maybe God closes the door, and you can't figure out why he's closed the door. It's like, God, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. And that's, James says, you ask amiss, right? He says, you ask wrongly. And let's be careful to know that asking amiss doesn't mean we're asking for something evil. It could just mean that the thing we're asking for is not what God needs for us or wants for us. And it will, that particular thing will not help us, me in particular, or whoever's asking, to exalt God's name, to expand God's kingdom, or to do God's will, which is the first half of the Lord's Prayer, all right? So here's what James is saying. When you come to God to ask for things, if you are operating from the wisdom from above, here's what you should be asking for. God, I would like more life. I would like more health. I would like a different car. I would like a different house, or whatever it is you're asking God for, but God, here's why I want it. I want it not to satisfy and spend on my own appetites. I want it because I am hungering for righteousness. I want whatever I'm asking for because I want that thing. I think that thing will help me to exalt your name in a better way. It'll help me to expend or extend your kingdom in more effective ways. It will help me to do your will or to cause other people to do your will more effectively. So, Father, would you give me this car? Would you help me with this house? Would you, whatever it is you're asking for, because I want your righteousness. I want to seek first your kingdom and your righteousness. And I think the thing I'm asking you for, better health or sparing my life from this cancer, I think that is what will help me to accomplish your will and to exalt your name and to extend your glory. Now let me ask you a question. Does God know better than us how to do those things? Yes or no? Yes. And so if God says, all right, Sam, if that's really what you want, if you really want me to use your life to exalt my name, are you willing for me to give you a good gift that you may not like? And that's when you have to make a choice, isn't it? Because when the good gift that God hands down to us goes contrary to the real thing going on in our appetite, what do? Well, let me tell you what happened here, because that's the next thing. The next thing is there was an exposure of a deadly root. There was an exposure of a deadly root. James says, all right, you have not because you asked not, and you stopped asking because God isn't giving you, and God isn't giving you what you want because he's a good father who only gives good gifts, and he will never give you a stone or a serpent. And at this time or that thing, whatever it is, that would be him giving you a stone or a serpent. It is not going to help you exalt God's name. It is not going to help you extend God's kingdom. It is not going to help you do his will. My response at that time is going to expose where my appetite is. You see? And so this is exactly what happens next. These believers that James is talking about said, all right, if God isn't going to give it to me, then I'm going to come over to this kingdom and I'm going to embrace this wisdom and I'm going to line up over here because these people have this all the time. For crying out loud, I'm not asking for a Rolls Royce. I just want a car that starts. I would just love to have four tires that are brand new once in my life. Right? And so, all of a sudden, now, my appetite over there when God said, now look, if I give you that, it's like giving you a stone or a serpent. I never give stones or serpents to my children. I only give good gifts. And so I'm not giving you that because that isn't how I know you personally are going to be able to exalt my name, extend my kingdom, or do my will. And then I say, well, you know what then? Fine. I'm coming over here because this is what I want. And it's a good thing. Having a little extra spending money is not sinful. Doing this isn't sinful. Having a car that I don't have to jumpstart every other time isn't sinful. It's actually going to help me not say things I shouldn't say and have to confess. Right? So how do lost people get this? Well, they go do this. They go get an extra job and they do this and they, you know what? Fine. If that's the way you're going to be, I'm putting all this energy over there at church and you know what? I'm done. I'm going to just show up and do my Sunday morning deal and then I'm here because this is where I'm going to start spending time because this is how I'm going to satisfy those aptitudes and those appetites. And James says, okay, let me just tell you what you did. You aligned yourself and you lined up with the world. That's what he means by being a friend of the world. You just took the loyalty that should have been driving you to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and you set it aside, and you came over here with all of your own righteousness. Well, look, I'm in this world, and I'm still doing all the Christian things. I'm still at church. I'm still got my Bible. Look, I got notes in it and all this, and you're doing all that. And God says, but you lined up on the wrong side. You joined the wrong army. You have become a friend of God. That's the shocking position that these people are in. And the second thing you see there is a scriptural admonition. James says, now look, when you line up with the wrong side, it's not just that you're somehow, you snuck over on the, you know, it's like, okay, you weren't paying attention and the game was going on or the battle was going on and you looked up and pretty soon, wait a second, I'm fighting on the wrong side. And you make a beeline over there to the right side. No, you're here. And James says, let me give you a word for that. Let me give you a word for you. Now, this is a hard word. Can you imagine hearing this word? James says, let me tell you what you've just done. Adultery. You are adulteresses. He uses the feminine form here because in the Old Testament, the nation of Israel was considered to be in a marriage with God. In the New Testament, you and I are considered to be in a marriage with Jesus. And when we line up with the enemy of God or the enemy of Jesus, we are committing, we are betraying that love. We are committing adultery. And so James says, let me admonish you. He says, do you suppose it is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealously over the spirit that he made to dwell in us? Therefore, it says God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. So what is the spirit God caused to dwell in us, right? These are two questions that come up in the text now. What is the spirit that God caused to dwell in us, and who is doing the yearning?
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.